Imagine for a second that you are standing in the dead center of Times Square.
Okay, setting the scene.
Yeah, so there are these massive glowing billboards flashing from like every conceivable angle.
Right.
Taxis are just laying on their horns. Thousands of people are shoulder to shoulder, talking, shouting, just moving in this chaotic blur.
Total sensory overload.
Exactly. Now imagine that you never actually get to leave that intersection.
Oh, wow. That sounds awful.
Right, that level of input, that flashing, unrelenting, overstimulating noise, imagine that is just playing on a continuous loop, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, right inside your head.
It sounds completely paralyzing, honestly.
Yeah.
But the wild thing is, for a vast majority of us, that's actually a highly accurate neurological description of like a normal Tuesday.
A normal Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, we are literally carrying that Times Square level of noise around in our pockets everywhere we go. And our brains are constantly trying to process a volume of information that, honestly, our ancestors wouldn't have encountered in an entire lifetime.
Right, the cognitive load is just staggering. And that's exactly why we're here today. We are going to explore this entirely universal modern problem.
Which is so needed right now.
It really is. We're talking about constant information overload, the relentless pressure to perform, and just the sheer volume of the world we live in.
Yeah.
But, and here's the hook, we are looking at this through a very specific and I think incredibly fascinating lens.
Right, our source material for today.
Exactly. Today's deep dive pulls from an excerpt of a message titled Faith Beams, Guarding Your Heart in a Noisy World.
Such a great title.
It really is. And the mission for you, the listener, and for us today is to figure out how to navigate all of this from a global faith-based perspective.
And I think what immediately grabs your attention when you dive into this text is how geographically widespread this feeling of drowning in noise really is.
Oh, it's everywhere.
It truly is. I mean, whether you're dealing with sophisticated social media algorithms that are, designed to hijack your attention, or relentless 24-hour news cycles, or just really heavy cultural expectations regarding your career or your family. The feeling of being utterly overwhelmed crosses every single border. It truly doesn't matter what continent you're standing on. The human nervous system is basically under siege globally.
Okay, let's unpack this because the core question of this deep dive is kind of staring us right in the face. How do we actually protect our inner peace when the volume of the world around us is permanently turned up to a 10?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question.
Right. But before we can look at how the modern world tries to handle this noise, we really have to establish the foundational philosophy that this text brings to the table.
The ancient blueprint.
Exactly, the
Yeah.
ancient blueprint. Specifically, it points to Proverbs 4:23, which says, "Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it."
It's such a profound starting point because it completely reframes the entire issue.
How so?
Well, it presents the problem not as a modern technological glitch, you know. It frames it as an ancient human vulnerability.
Yeah.
In the original context of that proverb, the heart wasn't just about like romantic feelings or pure emotion.
Okay.
It was considered the seat of the intellect, the will, and your moral compass.
Like the control room.
Exactly. It was the control room of the human operating system.
Yeah.
So the text is making this direct causal link. It's arguing that your external actions, your reactions to stress, your overall life trajectory, that all flows directly from the condition of that internal control room.
You know, I was reading that verse, and I couldn't help but think about it in terms of modern IT
Oh,
infrastructure.
I love a good tech analogy. Let's hear it.
Okay, so think about guarding your heart like a network admin installing a highly sophisticated cybersecurity firewall.
Okay, tracking with you. How does the firewall operate in this context?
Well, if you're running a secure server, you don't just like build a giant concrete wall and disconnect from the internet entirely,
Right,
right?
because then the server's useless.
Exactly. That defeats the whole purpose. Instead, you build a firewall with very specific rules. You use packet sniffing.
Oh, okay, getting technical.
Just a little. You inspect every single piece of data trying to enter the network. You say, okay, this data packet is empathy for a friend. Let that through port 80.
Nice.
But this data packet is mindless, cynical outrage from a stranger on the internet. Block that IP address entirely.
Block it completely, yes.
Right, because if you don't protect the root system, if you let the malware of constant anxiety in passing, then everything downstream gets infected.
The whole system crashes.
Exactly. Applied here, the noise of the world is basically like a brute force hacking attempt on your inner peace.
What's fascinating here is how the text backs up that exact mechanical concept using a historical example.
Oh, King David.
Yes, King David. And regardless of your personal background, historically, David was a figure who faced intense, unrelenting pressure.
Understatement of the year.
Right. I mean, we are talking about literal life and death danger. He had a king actively hunting him. Mm. He faced deep political betrayal. He literally lived in caves for a while. He endured massive public criticism.
So way more stressful than just waking up to 100 unread emails.
Without a doubt. His external world was the absolute definition of chaotic, life-threatening noise.
Right.
But the text points out his specific survival mechanism. He managed that external chaos by focusing entirely on his internal firewall.
Which is so counterintuitive.
It is. There's a reference to Psalm 51.10.
Yeah.
Where David asks, "Create in me a clean heart, O God."
Wow.
Through prayer and reflection, he's essentially asking for that exact system reset you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And notice the mechanics of what he's doing here. He's not asking for the armies to disappear in that moment.
Right.
He's not asking for his circumstances to magically change. He is asking for his internal foundation to be clear to the noise so he can navigate the chaos with clarity.
That distinction is huge. I mean, he's not saying change my environment. He's saying fix my internal filter.
Precisely. And this raises a really important point for you, the listener, to think about. Guarding the heart isn't about running away.
Right.
It's not moving to the woods and hiding from the world in a cave. It is an active, daily practice of spiritual grounding.
You're actively maintaining the firewall.
Exactly. You maintain it so you can actually function in a chaotic world without being absorbed and corrupted by it.
Okay, so we have this ancient blueprint, but let's fast forward to the present day.
Let's do it.
How does this actually map onto our modern obsession with control and productivity and connection?
It's a great question.
The text explores this by looking at different cultural responses to noise, and I found it incredibly revealing. Let's look at the theme of the illusion of control, starting with North America and Asia.
Yeah, two regions with very different yet equally intense manifestations of noise.
Right. The reading points out that in many Asian cultures, there is this massive cultural emphasis on achievement, collective duty, and discipline.
Which yields incredible results.
It does, but it also often creates this immense pressure and mental overload.
Mm-hmm.
The noise there is the heavy expectation to perform, to succeed, and to meet these really rigorous societal standards.
Yeah, pressure is constant.
And then you pin it to North America, and the noise is very different. It is entirely digital.
Oh, completely.
It's the doom scrolling, the constant news alerts, the screens that are just never turned off.
The modern North American nervous system is practically fused to a Wi-Fi connection.
Oh, why?
We are terrified of being disconnected.
We really, really are. But, okay, here's where I actually have to push back on the material a little bit.
I like that's here.
I was reading this section about dealing with overload, you know, setting boundaries, taking a breath, limiting screen time.
Yeah.
And I thought, wait a minute, is this just standard corporate burnout advice disguised as faith?
Ah, I see what you mean.
Like, my company's HR department sends out emails telling me to limit my screen time and practice mindfulness.
Right, right.
So is guarding your heart really a distinct spiritual practice, or is it just like a dressed up wellness seminar to make me a better worker?
That is a very fair critique. And honestly, is an easy trap to fall into because the vocabulary overlaps so much.
Yeah, it sounds the same on the surface.
It does. But if we dig into the underlying philosophy here, there is a much deeper spiritual layer happening that completely separates this from standard corporate burnout advice.
Okay, how so?
Let's look at the corporate model first. HR tells you to rest and unplug so that your brain can recover, right?
Mm-hmm.
And why? So that you can be more productive and optimized when you log back in on Monday. The goal of corporate wellness is optimization.
Right. It's about resting so you can hustle harder later.
Exactly. But the faith-based approach outlined in the text operates on a completely different axis.
Interesting.
In North America, yes, they are actively setting boundaries and limiting screen time. But they are explicitly choosing positive influences and focusing on faith-based content to protect their spiritual worldview. It's not about productivity. It's an act of defiance. They're basically saying, I refuse to let an engagement algorithm dictate my soul's disposition.
Wow.
I am unplugging to protect my inherent worth, which exists completely independent of my output.
That's a strong statement. But functionally, isn't curating a good vibe the same as guarding the heart? Like, if I just follow positive accounts, isn't that doing the job?
Not quite. And this is a crucial distinction. Curating a good vibe is about managing your temporary emotional state.
Okay.
It's about keeping things aesthetically pleasing and just avoiding discomfort. Guarding the heart, especially in this context, is about anchoring your core identity in something permanent.
I see.
A vibe shatters the second you get a terrifying medical diagnosis or you lose your job.
Yeah, vibes don't survive real life.
Exactly. A guarded heart, anchored in faith, maintains its structural integrity even when the external circumstances are horrific.
Ah, okay. That is a massive difference. One is a mood and the other is a foundation.
And we see this profound psychological shift detailed in the Asian context as well.
How does that look?
The text notes that people there are rediscovering the concept that success means nothing without inner peace.
Mm-hmm.
They are prioritizing quiet reflection, not to recharge for more hustle, but to actively detach their identity from their achievements.
That's powerful.
When your entire identity is based on performance,
yeah.
The noise of societal expectation is deafening. But when you shift to an intrinsic, spiritually grounded identity, that external noise suddenly loses its power over you.
Your worth is not defined by your work. That is a completely different operating system than what most of the modern world runs on.
Entirely different.
Okay, I see the distinction now, but this brings us to a really interesting crossroads in the research.
Where is that?
Well, we've talked about Asia and North America, where the strategy for dealing with noise seems highly individualistic.
Right.
It's very much, I will set my boundary, I will curate my feed, I will detach my identity.
Very focused on the self?
Yes. But then the text explores the global south, and it introduces a totally different mechanism for resilience.
It's a complete paradigm shift, honestly. We move from individual boundary setting to collective emotional shielding.
Yes. And as I was reading this, a concept hit me that I think we need to make the core thesis of this deep dive.
Okay, lay it on me.
The strategy of subtraction versus the strategy of addition.
Oh, subtraction versus addition. I really like where this is going. Break down the mechanics of that.
Well, look at the individualistic West. Our entire strategy for finding peace relies on subtraction.
Right.
Let me subtract the screens. Let me subtract the news. Let me isolate myself, put on noise-canceling headphones, and just subtract the noise.
We try to build a soundproof room.
Exactly. We try to build a soundproof room. But the text takes us to the Caribbean, South America, and Africa. Yeah. These are regions that often face immense, inescapable external pressures. We're talking severe economic instability, political unrest, or the very real threat of natural disasters.
You can't just unplug from a hurricane.
Right. You can't unplug from an economic crisis.
The noise is environmental and existential. You can't just put on headphones to ignore it.
Exactly. So their countermeasure isn't subtraction. It's addition.
Okay. Unpack that.
The text notes that in the Caribbean, they counter these pressures with vibrant community life, music, and church gatherings.
Yeah.
In South America, faith is expressed through joyful worship and gathering together, even in the most difficult circumstances.
Beautiful.
And in Africa, the focus is heavily on collective hope and resilience. Instead of trying to build a soundproof room, they are adding something louder, more beautiful, and more powerful to drown out the storm.
Wow.
They are adding a massive, joyful choir right in the middle of the chaos.
That is, if we connect this to the sociology of human resilience, you are hitting on a vital truth about how we process trauma and stress.
Yeah.
Community itself acts as a nervous system regulator.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
In the West, you are alone behind your personal firewall, trying to fend off the sheer volume of the world single-handedly.
It's exhausting.
It is. Your brain is bearing the full cognitive load. But in these collectivist cultures, you don't have to face the noise alone.
The load is distributed?
Precisely.
Mm.
Think about the physiological mechanism of singing and gathering together, which is highly prevalent in these regions.
Okay.
Group singing literally synchronizes heart rates and down-regulates the stress response in the brain.
Wait, really? It literally changes your heart rate?
Yes. The community absorbs the shockwaves of life's pressures together. Shared faith and shared resilience distribute the weight of the world so no single person is crushed by it.
That's incredible.
The text highlights Isaiah 26.3 here, which says, "You will keep in perfect peace those whose minds are steadfast."
Mm.
In this context, steadfastness isn't a solitary white-knuckled grip. It's an interlocking shield wall of a community holding the line together.
Which is such a powerful thought for you if you're listening to this right now on your commute or, you know, while doing the dishes and you're feeling entirely overwhelmed by the noise of your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe the answer isn't just deleting another app or isolating yourself further. Maybe the answer is finding your people.
Right.
Finding a community that reinforces your hope rather than amplifying your fear. Sometimes you need a shield wall, not just a firewall.
That is a brilliant way to frame it.
Yeah.
And it really leads us to the final piece of the puzzle.
Which is?
How do we synthesize all of this? How do we combine the intentional boundary setting of North America, the identity anchoring of Asia, and the vibrant additive community of the Global South?
Well, to bridge this into our everyday lives, the text actually points us toward the European model. And Europe serves as a really fascinating crucible for this exact synthesis.
It does, largely because it introduces the concept of the intentional pause, which confronts the modern philosophical void head on.
The European approach detailed in the reading is all about stepping back from busy lifestyles, prioritizing time out in nature, attending faith gatherings, and deliberately slowing down.
Yeah.
They anchor this to another ancient directive, Psalm 46.7, which simply says, "Be still and know that I am God."
Be still. I mean, it is two words, but it might be the most terrifying instruction you can give a modern human being.
Terrifying? How so?
Because stillness forces you to look at the unoptimized self.
Oh, wow.
We use the noise of the world as an anesthetic. If I'm constantly consuming information, constantly working, constantly swiping,
then you never have to think.
Exactly. I never have to sit in silence and face my own internal anxieties, my fears, or, you know, the big existential questions about my purpose.
Right.
Choosing to be still is an absolute rebellion against a culture that demands constant motion. Is the moment you stop running from the noise and actually face it.
It is a total rebellion.
Yep.
And from this idea of rebellious stillness, the text actually provides a highly practical everyday checklist for building and maintaining your personal firewall.
Oh, yes, the checklist.
Let me lay this out for you because it is super actionable. The checklist is 4 steps. Number 1, actively choose what voices you listen to. Number 2, take deliberate information breaks. Number 3, prioritize prayer or reflection. And number 4, surround yourself with positive influences.
You could basically see the entire global journey in that simple list.
You really can.
Choosing voices and taking breaks. That's the North American digital boundary.
Yep.
Prioritizing reflection. That's the Asian detachment of identity from achievement.
Right.
Surrounding yourself with positive influences. That's the African, South American, and Caribbean strategy of addition and community. It perfectly synthesizes the global response.
It really does. But out of everything in this reading, the text offered one specific diagnostic question that I thought was an absolute game changer.
Oh, I know exactly which one you're talking about.
If you take nothing else away from this deep dive today, write this question on a sticky note and put it on your bathroom mirror.
Seriously, do it.
Ask yourself this tomorrow morning when you unlock your phone. The question is what I'm allowing into my mind helping me grow or creating stress?
That is the ultimate packet-sniffing rule for your firewall right there.
Yes.
But to use it effectively, it requires brutal honesty with yourself.
Because we lie to ourselves all the time.
We do. We so often consume toxic information under the noble guise of, like, staying informed or being responsible.
Oh, absolutely.
We tell ourselves we need to read this hostile political argument so we know what's going on, or we need to track this social media drama, or we absolutely must answer this work email at 11:00 p.m. because we are essential to the team.
You justify the malware.
We absolutely do.
Yeah.
But if you run those actions through that diagnostic question, is this actually helping me grow into a more grounded, loving, and steadfast person? Or is it just manufacturing artificial stress?
Mm.
The reality becomes clear very quickly.
It totally strips away all our sophisticated excuses. Like, no, this 45-minute deep dive into a stranger's social media argument is not expanding my intellect.
Not at all.
It is not helping me grow. It is just injecting cortisol directly into my brain, and I am holding the syringe.
And bringing it all home, this is really the core unifying message of the material.
Yeah.
Whether you are navigating the intense hustle of a megacity in Asia, dealing with systemic economic pressures in the Caribbean, seeking a quiet, intentional pause in Europe, or trying to escape the relentless digital bombardment in North America, the fundamental challenge is exactly the same.
The world is loud.
The world is inherently, inescapably noisy.
Right.
But peace is still entirely possible.
Right.
It just requires deep daily intention. Guarding your heart isn't a passive state of just hoping things calm down. It is an active, protective measure that secures your purpose, your identity, and your faith.
Let's do a quick recap of the journey we've been on today.
Let's do it.
We started with the ancient blueprint King David, surrounded by literal enemies, not praying for an easier life, but praying for a clean heart to manage his external chaos.
Amazing.
We saw how the West uses digital boundaries as a spiritual defense, and how the East is learning to detach inner worth from external achievements. We explored the incredibly powerful strategy of addition in the Global South, where vibrant, joyful community acts as a shared emotional shield against life's literal and figurative storms.
The shield wall.
The shield wall. And finally, we looked at the European model of rebellious stillness, bringing it all down to that one piercing diagnostic question. Is this input helping me grow or just creating stress?
It truly is a comprehensive masterclass in protecting your inner life.
It really is.
But I do want to leave you with a final thought to mull over today. Something that builds on everything we've unpacked.
All right, what is it?
Well, we spend so much energy, and rightfully so, trying to build firewalls against the external noise of the world.
Right, blocking the bad stuff.
We block the news, we mute the cultural expectations, we turn off the notifications.
Mm-hmm.
But what if, once we finally manage to silence the outside world, we discover an entirely new challenge?
Oh.
What if the most difficult noise we have to confront isn't the flashing billboards of Times Square, but the echo chamber of our own unfiltered thoughts? True peace might not just be about blocking out the flashing lights of the world. It might ultimately be about learning how to sit with ourselves, facing our own internal noise, and finding grace in the quiet.
That completely flips the perspective. I mean, if you finally manage to escape that Times Square intersection inside your head, you still have to figure out how to be okay with the silence that replaces it.
Exactly.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Remember, you are the third person in this conversation, and we just love taking these journeys with you. Keep asking those hard questions about what you're letting past your firewall. Stay curious, and we'll see you next time.